Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Chris Fetters of Dogman.com, and I'm here with the head of hoops, our good friend Aaron Beach.
Hey, y'all.
And it's the day before the Pac-12 tournament, Tuesday. We'll be putting this out a little bit later today. And had to track down Mr. Beach. Had to find him in the deep, dark recesses of Mount Lake Terrace.
He bribed me with barbecue and beer.
in that order.
Yep.
And... But we wanted to make sure everyone, we wanted to put something out. We hadn't put out anything in basketball and hoops related for a podcast since the last time we talked. And a lot has changed since then. A lot of losing, but then all of a sudden, the last couple games, out of nowhere, they pull something right out of the fire, and they start to become the team that we all thought they would.
Yep. All of a sudden, we are... talking about Dark Horse again, right? And you're hearing it in the media, and you're seeing it on Twitter, and now Washington might be the team to watch out for, and part of me agrees.
Well, it's interesting because, of course, they're a 12 seed. I mean, they were still the bottom team of the conference, even with the wins at Arizona State and Arizona.
With a net ranking of, what is it, in the mid-50s?
Yeah, the interesting thing was is that before the Arizona State game, I thought I saw the stat where Washington, as the worst-placed team in the Pac-12, still had a net that was better than UCLA at the time, who was the best the top team in the Pac-12. And obviously, that's changed a little bit. But it just goes to show you how close the margins and fine the margins have been for Washington basketball.
Yep.
Losing by three, losing by two, losing by six, losing by four, losing by two, losing by four. You know, they've only been blown out a couple times. And when I say blowouts, I mean, we're still talking 12, 14-point losses. And then all of a sudden, you look at those games like against USC, they win by 32. The game against Oregon State, same thing basically. Same thing against Cal. So they had these just monster wins. You know, very, very lightly sprinkled into all these incredibly close losses. And I'm sure that has to be really, really mentally draining on these guys. And I think they maybe got out a little bit of their frustrations on the road in the desert.
Probably. I mean, I'll give you that. Maybe they just lived up, or at least the young guys lived up to their potential at the same time.
Yeah.
Right? Stewart's been doing it all season. But we finally seen, you know, Jaden McDaniels play like the guy that we thought was coming to Washington in the first place, and it's had, you know, huge ramifications.
I asked you before a little earlier, if I had, you know, brought this up to you in a podcast before the season started, how many Pac-12 freshman player of the week honors would Jaden McDaniels and Isaiah Stewart split? What would your answer have been?
I bet 3-3, at this point,
yeah.
Figure, probably.
Because to me, it felt like outside of those two guys, who were the other guys that were going to get in on those awards? Okongwu from USC.
Yep, in the Arizona.
And maybe maybe Mannion and Green from Arizona.
Yep.
Other than those other three guys, to me, Jaden McDaniels and Isaiah Stewart were the dominant. They were supposed to be the dominant freshmen. Stewart's lived up to the billing, as
Absolutely.
You just said. And then obviously McDaniels has run really hot and cold, but right now he is absolutely living up to his billing in terms of not just a difference maker and a guy that can get you points on his own, but what he does defensively as a mismatch, as a wing guy out there, and can also help out on Stewart with blocks, being a rim protector, all those things. I think we're obviously seeing the best of Jaden McDaniels right now.
No doubt. When we last talked, which was, about 3 weeks ago, I was super negative, right? And I don't like being that negative about these local kids in particular. It drives me nuts, but he was killing me. as a fan of the program and just want to see them succeed. But now, if you, I don't know what mental shift, who's gotten in his head. I don't know where that's changed, but something's flipped. You see his court demeanor is way more mature, right? He's not responding emotionally. The expressions on his face are, it looks like he's leveled up maturity wise. And, the last, particularly on the Arizona trip, his decision-making was infinitely better, right? The turnovers weren't there. He took good shots. You know, a contested shot for Jaden is not, or excuse me, a non-contested shot for Jaden is a contested shot for most guys. So sometimes it's a little hard to tell when he's making the right decision and when he's putting up a shot, whether or not he should or not. But definitely been in the positive, you know. I've been really impressed.
I think the biggest thing, there's two things that have really, that I've noticed a lot, especially in the last couple games with Jaden. One is that it really feels like his defense catalyzes his offense. Mm-hmm. Like when he got, you know, when he had the six blocks in the first half against USC, you could tell how that made a difference. Mm-hmm. He was just engaged.
Yep.
And you could tell, like, that backside block early in the game against Najee and against Arizona was a big deal. I mean, you could tell immediately, okay, he's into this. He's focused. He's going after it. So, and then the other thing I noticed, too, is that he is really trying hard. I think he's almost doing it deliberately to get his other guys involved. Like, he is more than ready to give the ball up to Marcus Sahonis or Elijah Hardy or Naz Carter or Jamal Bey or whoever it is in terms of running the show, in terms of, you know, if he gets a rebound, he's looking to outlet. Even if he gets the ball and he's going up the floor, as soon as he gets past midcourt, he's finding the guard.
Yep.
He's finding the other guy to start to instigate things a little bit. And I think some of the one-on-one stuff, it's still there. But when he's doing it, you can almost tell that he's doing it with more of a plan than before. I think before he just felt like, hey, I'm the best guy out here. I can just do it on my talent.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think slowly but surely he realized, no, I got to come with something specific. I got to, you know, worst case, I got to get fouled. I got to do something else to factor the game, you know, and trying to not just do everything. And I also feel like, you know, whether it's his defense or whether it's just the selflessness or what have you, it's also impacted his shooting. Mm-hmm. He's obviously shooting better.
Yep. He's up over 40% now.
And he's making a difference at the foul line. He's making his foul shots. I mean, everything is coming together at the right moment for him. And I don't know, maybe it's one of those things where since he knows he's one and done, he sees the light at the end of the tunnel, and all of a sudden it's like, hey, man, I don't have any longer to screw around here. We got to get the show on the road.
Well, and furthermore, like, how does he want to leave his legacy here, right? This last couple of weeks is really going to define how people remember him, right, long term.
And it's interesting, too, Beach, because I wondered if he even really thought about those kinds of things maybe until a little while ago. Maybe someone has finally impressed upon him that is this how you really want to leave it? Is this really how you want to go out?
Well,
so I also think one thing that has to be factored in, and I don't know how important it's been or how whether it's underrated or overrated, but you could just tell the last couple of weeks when he was struggling and he was trying to put stuff together and it wasn't coming together, or he might pick up a tee or something. His guys really picked him up, whether it was the staff or whether it was his teammates. And I wonder if that positive reinforcement is finally starting to pay dividends a little bit.
Well, and I say that's like for the whole team, really, because it's really impressed me how Hops managed to keep them mentally afloat through all this losing. Losing sucks, right? Nobody likes losing. Losing is not fun. And they've been losing a lot. But yet somehow, it at least on the surface by appearance, they seem to have kept it together. The attitudes are good. They're not turning on each other. You don't see a bunch of comments coming out publicly or in social media, you know, selling individuals or coaching staff or anything down the river. There's been none of that. So that's a credit to Hopkins and Will and Rice. I mean, I've been really impressed by that.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Looking at the other guard situation, what are your thoughts on how Hop has blended in the guys to take over for Quad A Green? We'll talk a little bit more about Quad A's situation and whether or not he'll factor into the tournament if he even gets a chance to play. We'll talk a little bit about that in a bit. But I wanted to get your take on how you feel he's done getting Sahonis up to speed at the same time bringing in Hardy for spot things, and obviously he's playing a lot more now. And then obviously the play of Naz Carter and Jamal Bey and how all of those guys have kind of found their niche and have kind of been able to knit something together that all of a sudden looks like something that could be that can help them do something in the tournament.
I think so. Two different questions there. There's point guard, right, which is you lose Quad A, you lose your rudder, right? And Washington's really struggled over the last 2 months of the season, especially. And they've come both, and you're right, Hop's done so much experimentation the last, well, he's never stopped. This season has been one nonstop experiment, right? The rotations, everything is every game by game different.
And it really hasn't stopped with this last few games because Hardy has obviously found more and more of a role.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm pleasantly surprised by the outcome in the desert. A sweep in the desert is rare. And especially with this team.
First time in almost 10 years. Yeah.
Sahonis, to me, has definitely been the better of the two between Hardy and himself. So to get a couple wins out of there with really kind of below average point guard play has been was surprising.
Yeah.
That being said, I'm not going to pretend that, you know, Hardy's the end-all be-all at point guard either. He can't shoot a lick. You know, shooting 15% from three. There's certain things that, you know, putting four games together here in this Pac-12 tournament with the point guards that Washington has currently, I think it's going to be a tall ask, even though I think that they are the dark horse and they have the two probably most talented guys in the league. And anytime you've got that, anything can happen.
Yeah.
But if you're asking me whether or not the point guard, they can get enough productivity or execution out of their point guard position to win four in a row, I'm not sure. Because as much as I can appreciate the effort that Hardy has put in, he's still struggling in a lot of ways. He does bring that tenacity, that kind of Vinoy Overton, you know, scattered recklessness.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you can't hit a bucket. After a while, you know, there's going to be points that you need to have, and I don't know if he's the guy to get them. So
I'll tell you what, I'm really mixed about Elijah Hardy for a couple of those reasons. You're absolutely right. In terms of the tenacity, I think the Vinoy Overton comparison defensively is somewhat apt. I don't think he's kind of I don't know if he's that out of
he's
control.
Not. No. He's
Vinoy,
not.
Vinoy was
he's
a little
not that
different.
Effective.
Yeah, he's a little different animal there. But I still believe that that Hop thinks he's his best on ball guard. He's his best on ball defender.
Right.
In the perimeter.
Yep.
He can harass guys and do that. I think that's important. But I would say I would kind of attack that thing from a little different angle and say that, you know, while it looks like Hardy has kind of picked up the brain dead moments that we kind of ascribed to McDaniels, and I mean, like the Arizona game, picks up a T for going to their bench was absolutely absurd.
Yep.
I don't know what he tried to accomplish. And then when they're doing the line after the game, he's waving to the fans and he's like, you know, like
when you might play him a week from then,
and you're thinking, what is he done this year to all of a sudden feel like he's entitled to act that way? It boggles the mind. But on the other hand, I will give him a ton of credit because I really do feel it's that kind of swag and that kind of attitude that these guys have sorely been lacking.
And
I don't know if that has to manifest itself all the time in those kind of knucklehead type situations. But you know what? I think Hopkins at this point is almost kind of like, if we have to have a brain dead moment or two to get these guys believing that they have the attitude and they have the that kicks in their competitiveness and really can put them at that next level, you almost kind of have to live with it, I think.
Maybe. I was so look, the outcome was optimal
yeah.
in Arizona, right? Elijah played, I think near 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And Sahonis didn't play much. Not nearly as
not
much.
As much, yeah.
And I'm sitting there wondering why, with a guy as well as Sahonis, in my opinion, is playing and shooting better than 40% from three, which is one of the biggest warts on the team, is their lack of a consistent three-point shooter.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why I didn't play more. So that was one. That was the one thing in the desert that I questioned. Like, why is Marcus not playing more? Because to me, he's been the biggest revelation in the last, besides Jaden, of course, in the last couple of weeks or so.
Yeah. No, there's no doubt. I mean, there's. But the beautiful part about that question is that now all of a sudden it feels like they have some options.
Mm-hmm.
They can maybe do a couple different things.
Yeah.
Do that. Or if they need to get a couple stops, maybe he puts in Hardy. And they, they even had a moment, where they have gone man for a little bit at times if they needed to get a switch up. But I think it's really important to not understate how Washington was able to do offensively against two very different defensive philosophies. Arizona State was going to try to harass the crap out of them. They scored 90 points on the road.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to do wonders for your confidence offensively.
Right.
And then to be able to go to Arizona, which is going to be a little bit more traditional, in-your-face, half-court defense, man-to-man, get up in your grill, and that kind of stuff, for them to be able to – and especially when you're down 10, 11, 12 points in the second half, to be able to come back in what is no question – the toughest road environment in the Pac-12. Mikhail is, I've covered mm-hmm. a few games there. It's nuts. And, the second half booming with the refs and all that, that's a very common occurrence. Those guys, they're not used to losing ever there. I mean, it's pretty crazy. So for them to do that in back-to-back years, because they won there last year, that's a pretty huge deal. And it does underscore what they were capable of doing this year, which, of course, goes back to the general question. What the hell happened?
Well, and the other thing is, too, they fed Stewart the ball, right? They made a deliberate effort.
Yeah, they had to
get him the ball.
Yeah, they had
And for whatever reason, we haven't seen that, most of February. Well, January.
I think to answer that, the way I've looked at it is that I think it's finally taken them this long
to figure out how to do it.
Because what is basketball?
True.
Basketball, as you know, as a coach, it's always a game of counters.
Yeah.
So you've got a set. They got a set. They figure out how to counter it. Now you got to counter the counter. Yep. They counter the counter the counter.
Yep.
And it goes on and on and on. I think it's literally taken them this long, especially when you take out that piece with Quad A not in there. So now all of a sudden you see some of the dicier feeds into the post over the top. It's taken them a while and a lot of practice for them to get somewhat proficient at it, I think.
No, agreed. But the thing, what that's done, though, is A, you risk foul trouble trying to defend Isaiah, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the first thing. And it creates so much space, so much room underneath the basket because you're doubling. You're having to double him to stop him, right? So all of a sudden, everybody's open, right? Somebody's always open when he has the ball underneath the basket just because how you have to defend him. And they're finally figuring out how to use that, right? And it showed up.
Yeah.
Particularly, Arizona State's pretty small.
Yeah.
They don't have a big.
Yeah.
Right. But Arizona did. And he just proved, Isaiah proved in that game, you just can't, even if you've got a high quality big underneath, you've got to double me. Right.
And I understand that everyone talks about Isaiah Stewart's motor and how it just doesn't stop and all that stuff. But I think it's taken me a whole season to realize why that is so crucial to his overall game.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd think it manifests itself in very obvious ways in terms of, oh, he gets up and down the floor, he's available, all this stuff. That's all true. The reason why I think he is so proficient and at a level different than not just players that are freshmen of his size, but of any college basketball player that plays his position,
mm-hmm.
is that when you compare that to a Jaden McDaniels or someone else who you see their head drop or you see a letdown if mm-hmm. they're not getting fed, if they don't have the opportunity to get the ball and go to work, he never stops working.
Nope.
So it's not just the motor to get up and down the floor, but once he's in the post, you can tell when he's frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
Does that ever affect him the next time he's down on the floor? No. I don't know if I've ever seen it.
No, he takes it out.
It's like
he takes it out on the defender.
No, but here's the weird. So I'm going to mix my sports metaphors. I'm going to go really nuts here.
Okay.
He plays the game with like a cornerback mentality.
Yeah.
It's like next play, next play, next play. I don't care if I just got called for an offensive foul that was the worst call in the history of college basketball. Next time I get the ball, it's next play. I don't even know what happened the last play. It's like he literally has it's like a new play literally every play, and he has the unique and incredible ability to just whitewash whatever happened.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter. It literally doesn't matter. And I think that's the real genius behind how Isaiah Stewart plays to me.
Well, and so he gets down the floor so fast, right? There's nonstop effort. That rebound goes out. He's outletting, and he's down the floor as fast as any of the guards. But what that does is that allows him to set up and get position in the post.
Yeah.
You know, before the defense is ready for it. So he gets a great position. He gets seals. He gets it all.
Right.
And now they're figuring out how to get it to him. There's nobody in the Pac-12 that.
But as you said, Beach, all those things you would think would lend himself to be getting the ball very early in sets,
mm-hmm.
and in transition. They've done a better job of that. But notice how many times a guy on the outlet on the wing just it doesn't want to pull the trigger,
mm-hmm.
and yet that you can tell he's a little bit frustrated by it because he's working his socks off. He's just absolutely getting bully left and right, and you know every team is trying to take him out physically.
Right.
I mean that's easy. You can just tell. But it never seems to affect him the next time he comes down to the floor, and that's been the most incredible thing I've seen about him. So,
yep.
I just am amazed, and like I said again, not just with Jaden, but with Isaiah Stewart. You know, enjoy him.
Yeah,
because you get one last chance. I mean, this
might be
Wednesday could be could be the last chance, but they could go all the way to Saturday too. We'll see.
Yep.
The second part, we were going to go back with Nas and Jamal Bey. You know, two guys who are kind of starting to do it in different ways. We even saw it in the last homestand here in Seattle, where there are stretches where Nas can literally just take over the game.
Yep.
I mean, and you can see him say, "Give me the ball.
Yep.
I'm gonna go drive. I'm gonna take it. I'm gonna shoot. I'm gonna do whatever it takes, even if I have to go dunk on somebody or do whatever." Get to the foul line, all those things. He's capable of doing it in these little stretches. What stops him from being the guy that can score 20 every game? Because he's clearly got that in him, and Hop talks about it all the time. It doesn't matter who they're playing against. He always thinks he's the best guy on the floor.
Yeah, isn't that funny? I've wondered the same thing, to be honest, because the way he started the season, you're like, oh, this guy's going to be, you know, he's going to average 18 a game and be leading this team the same way Jaylen did. And it just hasn't happened. But he's picked that up here at the end. I don't know the answer to that, Chris. I wonder it myself.
Yeah, it's just incredible. But I think you're also starting to see a little bit of it from Jamal Bey. And we were talking off air a little bit earlier about his kind of renaissance, which I think a lot of people will find very encouraging. But at the same time, for those that were paying attention, he did this exact same thing last year.
Yeah.
And as a true freshman, you get that.
Yep.
You're thinking, okay, it takes him the year to get going, to figure it out, and then all of a sudden, in the Pac-12 tournament, in the NCAA tournament, he's coming good.
Yep.
And you're thinking, wow, this really bodes well for the 2019-2020 season. And now all of a sudden, it feels like we're almost back to square one, where he's doing the exact same thing he did 12 months ago.
Yeah, I did like seeing him knocking down buckets late in the game against Arizona. That
was sure.
Encouraging.
No, huge.
He's doing a ton of his work at the line, right?
Yep. Cannot understate that.
Yeah, so he's shooting a high percentage. He's taking good shots. He doesn't shoot enough of them. But, we're finally at least starting to see him emerge. At least he's a great defensive player, right? He's rarely out of position. He rarely turns the ball over. There's a lot of things to like about him, but, if you're not scoring, you're not scoring.
There was one really key sequence against Arizona State late in the game where he had a steal and the ball slipped away in their end, and Arizona State got the ball back. And you could tell he was immediately like, oh, I screwed up. I didn't get it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, so you kind of really quickly saw the head drop.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden he got back in the game, got a key rebound, and was able to, you know, go ahead and parlay that into making another couple key moments down the stretch to help them win that game. Another guy who I think is growing up in front of our eyes and starting to make those plays where, okay, I gotta forget that happened. I gotta stay locked in and figure out a way to help this team win.
He's definitely a guy that seems to be affected by the struggles.
Yeah.
Right. And not, you know, all players deal with it differently.
Because of all the guys on the team that seems reluctant to pull the trigger,
mm-hmm.
he's right at the top of the list.
And you can almost see it on his face and in his body.
Well, like, you can almost see
that
it
hesitation.
On
the,
you can almost see
pause.
It on Pop's face.
Yep.
You know, or on the coach's face.
Like, shoot it.
Yeah. They want him to fire. Yep. They want him to. And it's not because he's some sort of 50% shooter for three or anything, but he has shown. I mean, he showed all the way back in the exhibition game. He was the leading scorer when they played SPU.
Yep.
I mean, he had, what, 20 points plus, and he was burying stuff, and he can score.
Yep.
And again, you're right. Going to the foul line, what he's been able to do at the line, and all the guys, I mean, those last two games.
And that's a mental thing. That's an encouraging mental thing.
It's not
right?
just an encouraging mental thing, but it I think it's got to free them up defensively
yeah.
to know that when you've put in enough work on the offensive end, to know that you can get a foul and you can just bury those, and all of a sudden now you're just extending. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a death by a thousand paper cuts for that other team.
Yep.
They're just, oh, okay, they got another point. Oh my God, they got another couple points.
Yep.
And now they're locking us down, and they're forcing us to heave those Remy Martin 30 footers or whatever.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden that's kind of a game changer.
All right. Yep.
I mean that's something that they clearly haven't had.
Right.
And is that just simply a function of focus?
No, like, I mean, everyone's wired different. And particularly for Bay, I think success breeds success for him, and he just needs to feel it. He needs to see the ball go through the hoop.
Yeah.
You know, as he makes the free throws, the game seems to improve, right, for him. Things slow down. And he's just one of those guys, you know, like where you got a guy like a totally unheralded guy like Sahonis who – you know, has no qualms taking a big shot, right? Just comes out of the gate. I don't care if you don't know my name. I'm going to shoot it anyway. And he's putting it in. Meanwhile, you got a guy, Bay, who is, you know, fairly heralded and people did know.
Right.
Came in with a lot of accolades and a high scoring reputation. But it just shows you how important it is, you know, to make that mental adjustment and that switch, you know, to becoming, hey, man, feeling good about yourself as a scorer and believing that the ball's going to go in.
Right.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The front court, besides Stewart, we could talk a little bit about Hamir Wright. We could talk, obviously, we've talked a bunch about Jaden. But then a little surprising that some of these other guys haven't come in, whether it's a Nate. I don't know if Nate Roberts is dealing with something or BPJ. It feels like Hop really is wedded to this kind of eight-man rotation. He wants to be that guy.
And I feel like kind of that mid-conference play stretch, he was trying, at least to integrate Nate, not so much BPJ, but especially Nate, how can we integrate him into this? And as much as he brings a great energy and he's super athletic and disruptive, I don't think he ever really synced offensively.
Yeah.
And he didn't take advantage of the shots he did get.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do if you're Hop, right? And watching social media, Hop was kind of getting criticized for not playing Nate more. But I was sitting there watching it going, well, he is trying to play him. He's just knocking down. He's not knocking down the shots. So,
well, explain to me right now, what could Nate give them that Sammy Timmons isn't giving them right now? Because Timmons, I feel, is like giving them
a
little bit on both ends.
Yep. Yeah. And you're probably right, Chris. And I think that's why Timmons is playing and a little bit, and Nate's not.
Yeah.
You know. But I agree with you.
Because one of the things that I noted in an article I wrote a couple weeks ago, and I think Hardy is guilty of this. I know Sahonis is guilty of this a little bit. They really rely too much on Stewart to try to create some two-man game that just doesn't work out. I mean, they want him to come up and screen up at the top of the key and stuff. It's fine and everything else, but when the ball just sits like that, it doesn't pop and it's not moving around. One of the things that's really helped them, I think, lately is that I think Hop's finally got it through those guys' minds. Even if you're just passing it around the horn, find angles. Get the ball popping. Yeah. Get the ball moving. And that will be the one – if there was one thing I will give Sammy Timmons massive credit for as an offensive player, because he is limited. I mean, he's a limited player offensively. But one thing I will give him credit for is he really understands his role in this offense.
Absolutely.
His offense is to get open, get the ball, and immediately distribute it.
Mm-hmm.
Pass it around. Set a screen for someone and then roll. Find it, you know, I mean, he will make some great passes. And he will keep the ball moving. And that's what they need more than anything. Because when those guys sit there at the top and they're just waiting for Stewart to come up, and you can tell sometimes he just gets frustrated by it because he's like, find me a wing that can get me the ball in the post, because that's how we operate.
Especially when your average height is, you know, like 6'7".
Yeah.
Like, it should be easier.
Yeah.
I feel.
No, it's just, it is interesting that way, but I think that's one of the reasons why I think they've started to have some success, even if Stewart is not in the game, because Sammy Timmons understands his role. And he can get inside and do some post moves and things like that. But more than anything is that he can get some guys open by screening and rolling, but also getting the ball quickly around and just getting that thing in motion.
Mm-hmm.
And you can even tell when Hop sometimes is frustrated by it. He'll immediately come out of timeout and he'll run that kind of weavy type stuff, the motion that they'll do.
Yep.
That'll tell you right away that he's not happy with the fact that the ball has just been stagnated.
Yep.
You know, it's just, and I think that's been a huge key for them offensively. Well, if they just keep the ball popping.
Outside of Nas and Jaden, they really don't have a one-on-one guy.
Yeah.
And that's been a pretty big challenge for them. They're not, that's not typically how Washington or West Coast basketball is played. Yeah. You know, that's especially how Rotary and all these guys run. It's very different. So this is not necessarily the kind of offense, or the personnel's not ideal.
Yeah.
For kind of this West Coast style of play.
But it is interesting that it's just that he talked so passionately about this idea of one more, one extra pass, one extra, you know, one extra roll, one extra.
What good is the extra pass if, and I'm not trying to bag on Wright here, but if he's your guy in the corner, is that really a higher percentage shot than, you know, Sahona shooting a contested three? I don't know that it is, right? You know, you got a bunch of guys who shoot in the low 30s, you know, all around the court. You know, looking for that extra pass, while I'm all about the unselfish play and making that pass, sometimes to me it's like you're passing up a good shot for maybe a more open shot from a worse player.
Right. Well, and that's a good segue too, because now that kind of brings us to this idea of Quade Green and what he could do if he even plays. I'm telling you guys right now, we don't know if he's going to play. We don't even know if he's going to be eligible to play. I don't even know if grades have necessarily been posted yet and all that stuff. So there's some unknowns there. But let's talk hypothetically, if in fact he does become eligible and can play, I think what you just described in terms of, you said, like a whole perimeter of guys shooting in the 30s or what have you. Now, all of a sudden, if you have Sahonis paired with Quade Green and they're both shooting in the mid 40s at 3-point shooting, now you've got two guys that you have to key on.
Right.
You can't just it's not like it's going to be Sahonis and Elijah Hardy, where you know Hardy is shooting 15% or whatever it is, and you can just slough off of him and you can really focus your energies on Sahonis.
Yep.
Now all of a sudden with Quade Green, that's a whole different animal.
Yeah. Yep. Thing is, though, I mean, he's going to be rusty. He's going to be 4 months rusty, 3 months rusty.
But he has been practicing.
He's been practicing. But so say they get him back for maybe in the finals, or which is what people are talking about, at least.
Right.
To me, the only way you use him is if Sahonis and Hardy are crap in the bed. Right. Otherwise, you know, if those guys are playing at least, you know, halfway competently, I don't think you risk it, because what are you going to get? You just don't know.
But here, but that's the hypothetical is you assume Sahonis is going to start. Because he's been starting with Bay and Carter. And then what happens if, you know, when you come, who's going to be the first guy off the bench? You know, they've been bringing Jaden off the bench, which is obvious.
Yep.
But would you bring Quade Green off the bench first before Hardy? Now?
Probably, yes.
He's still.
I feel like even a rusty Quade is probably better. More effective than a rusty, or than a, you know.
I think the one thing is he's playing. He's going to play within the offense.
Yeah.
So he's not going to turn the ball over.
Yeah.
As much.
Will the shots fall? I don't know. I don't know, Chris. That's a really good question. I would say, no. You got to roll with the guys that got you to this point.
Well, and give Hardy credit. He's going to be better defensively.
Yeah. Is he?
Well, he's a better on, like we talked about before. I think he's a better on ball defender.
Yeah, but is it enough that I think he's a solid defender. He's not a so he's fast and he gets in front of people. He doesn't create steals. He's not deflecting lots of passes or anything like that. So I don't know. That's to me where I don't get too caught up in a Hardy's a natty, pesky defender, but I don't think he's a great defender. I think he's a solid one.
Okay. Well, fair enough.
That's my take.
Well, no, I think it is going to be a really interesting thing. I still think it's going to end up being kind of a moot point. I don't envision Quadri Green playing, but you know, just if he does, I think it will be fascinating how Hopkins decides he wants to use him, because I think he's going to end up using him more than people think.
They got to get past Arizona first, and as much as Washington really did beat the pants off him last week, they're probably the last team I think you want to play in the first round, right? Yeah. Because they've been game planning and scheming the zone for a week and a half now, right? Practicing against it. They played a game against it, got the tails waxed. And then you potentially have Green coming back. So that would, to me, that's the team you don't want to play just because they're going to have a lot of extra motivation, right? Washington's playing on house money, right? So to them, this is their only opportunity to get the tournament. But at the same time, Arizona's got all the motivation in the world right now to come out strong and you know, get some revenge from being embarrassed on Saturday.
Well, and going into the tournament, another good segue, but it really does make you question what Hardy was thinking with his theatrics.
Yeah.
In Tucson.
Let's get him a little more fired up to play me again next week.
You knew you were going to be playing them in less than a week.
Yep.
And yet you're going to go jaw to their bench. You're going to go wave off their crowd. Again, love the swagger, love the attitude. But if that's a team that you're never going to see again, that's one thing. That's one thing. You know, that's, hey, you know, bye. But you're playing them in less than a week, and you knew that.
Yep.
That's what makes that kind of crazy to me.
Yep. So to me, this game is probably the toughest of any game that they would potentially face.
Well, I wonder about that. So let's lay it out. So let's say they beat Arizona on Wednesday, tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Then they would play USC.
Mm-hmm.
We already know they can beat USC. They beat them by 32.
Yep.
So that's doable.
Well, and furthermore, let's add to that that when you don't have a week, when you don't have a decent window to practice and prepare for Washington and the zone,
right,
it's different than every other team in the Pac-12. Preparing for Washington is a different preparation, game planning, right, than anybody else. And
no, this is definitely where having that kind of defense, it should be something that gives them a leg up.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's why I'm saying, get past Arizona, then the world's your oyster.
Yeah, so they play USC if they beat them. And then if they beat USC, they would play either Oregon, Oregon State, or Utah. Probably Oregon.
Yeah.
And we know Oregon—they're banged up. They've lost a couple guys.
Great. I mean, one of the best backcourts in the country. They got a huge matchup advantage over Washington in that regard. Right. But underneath the basket, it's a whole 180. It's, you know, completely different. Washington owns the post and the paint against Oregon. So I like that matchup.
But then again, Dana Altman, fantastic coach.
Yeah.
Can scheme a lot of different things.
Can.
They will pressure.
Yep.
So they'll try to do some things that Arizona State tried to do.
Yep.
Not necessarily in the same scheme or same way, but generally speaking, they won't have any qualms about picking up full pressure.
Yep.
Full court. So that'll be interesting too.
I still think it's a relatively favorable matchup for a 12 seed the conference tournament.
But I think it is a testament to Washington and their ability to kind of persevere through these things, where if you look at it, they don't have the odds of winning this tournament that a normal 12 seed would.
Agree.
Their odds right now are like of the 6 or 7 seed.
Yeah.
And so I think that'll tell you a lot, because that tells you Vegas thinks pretty highly of Washington as a 12 seed. They think they could be a real sleeper.
Mm-hmm. UCLA is the one that kind of concerns me, just because they've been on the hot streak. Stanford's been hot.
But you wouldn't see either one of those games until the finals.
Right. So, yep.
So, to finish this up, to wrap it up, give me your prediction.
Can I give you a prediction if they get past Arizona? No, well, I think Arizona's going to be a struggle.
Give me a hypothetical prediction. Let's say they beat Arizona, then what?
Okay, if they beat Arizona, I bet you they get to the finals. That's my prediction. I think they're going to the finals.
Okay, you don't believe they'll get four done in 4 days.
Well, what this season has showed us consistency wise, where Washington stands any chance of putting together four games in a row of good basketball.
Yeah.
Zero. They have no track record of that.
Right.
They don't have the shooters. They just don't. But it's a conference tournament, and you've got, you know, Stewart and Jaden, so anything could happen. They got to get past Arizona first. I don't feel great about that. I think Arizona's got all the motivation in the world to win that game. If they get past Arizona, I think they get to the finals and lose to UCLA.
Wow. Okay. That's very specific.
Yep.
I like it. But you have to admit, and I think you agree, tournaments are different animals.
Totally.
I mean, so can they do 4-4? We saw it. We even saw it. What, didn't Oregon do it last year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's possible. It can be done. You just have to be on a really great streak. You've got to have great cohesion, and you've got to be able to fight through a lot of adversity to get there. Because you know at some point in any of those games, bad things are going to happen.
Yep.
You might be up, and then all of a sudden, just like at Arizona, you're up 15 at half. Now all of a sudden, you know,
yep,
it's down to like 3-2 points.
That's
whatever.
My biggest concern is, okay, hey, they're up 4 with, you know, 3 minutes to go. You can't salt it away at this point.
Right.
Yeah, does Washington have the ball handlers and the, you know, capability to even, you know, close out a game?
And can they continue to make their shots
right
at the strike?
Right. Yeah, and I don't know if they can. But that said, beat Arizona, sky's the limit.
All right, folks, there you have it. Aaron Beach thinks they get to the finals if they win Wednesday.
Yes.
So I'll put that caveat out there.
Please.
But that still means four games in 4 days. So I think we have at least argued somewhat. I don't know if it's persuasively or not, but at least we've argued the point that it can be done.
Can be done, absolutely.
There you go. So we'll wrap it up there. Hope everybody enjoys the tournament, and it will be very, very interesting following the Huskies all the way through.
Wash your hands.
Okay. Public service announcement. And that's important, too. We all have to do that. We actually found a bottle of Purell, so that was funny.
Yep.
So anyways, for the head of hoops, Aaron Beach, and his health-conscious self, this is Chris Fetters of Dogman.com. Go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick Six, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick Six has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick Six is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.